No, I don't want to take away anything that. Let me just see. Yes.
Pass it around, I guess.
Pass it around.
All right.
Good evening.
Big turnout.
Big turnout this evening.
It's okay. So.
One of the unique aspects of the Haggadah, and if you pass that page around, you'll see, is that the people in the Haggadah are depicted with, instead of having regular human form, are depicted with bird's heads, which is why it's called the Bird's Heads Haggadah. If you look at the pictures in the different scenes, you see different scenes and you see different people. The question is, and a lot of time could be spent on this, is not an art history lecture this evening, you really want it to be a parsha here, so we're not going to spend too much time on the Haggadah itself, but if you look at the top picture, you see, this is probably hard to see from that distance, this is Moshe hitting the Yam, and here is Bnei Yisrael behind him. It's clearly Moshe because he's holding out the staff, here's the Yam in front of him, and actually the pictures have subtitles. So what you can tell is that Moshe has a bird's head, and Moshe has this funny hat. That funny hat in the Middle Ages was known as the Jewish hat, and it's both in Haggadahs and perhaps in real life, Jews were required to wear distinguishing garments. So within the Haggadah, and within other Haggadahs as well, within medieval art, this hat is always refers to Jews. So clearly everyone in this picture is Jewish. If you look down to the next picture, this is the Jews gathering the man. So you have two individuals here picking up the man from the floor. And again, once again, they have bird's heads instead of human heads, and they have the hats. The picture over here on the right is a Jew bringing the Korban Pesach. Once again, here he's not wearing the hat, but he has the bird's head. If you flip, if you look at the bottom picture, you see the scene of the Mitzrim chasing after Bnei Yisrael towards Yam Suf. And what you have in that picture is you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you have 6 figures, and all of a sudden you come across people for the first time who seem not to have bird's heads. They have circular heads. This guy over here is clearly a soldier. He's riding a horse. The pasuk told us that the Egyptians were riding horses. He's got his spear here. This seems to be Paro because he's got the crown and he's also riding a horse. Here you have another chariot with a soldier. All these guys have circular faces. They don't actually have full faces. And again, the question why they were bird's heads and why not perhaps has a halachic source in terms of not wanting to draw the human form. So even though they drew circular faces, they didn't draw the actual a picture where Paro is chasing after the Jews headed towards Yam Suf. You clearly have Paro. You clearly have Paro's soldiers. You clearly have Sus Rechev Paro. And all of a sudden you have these two people who have bird's heads. So the question is, why are these guys here with the bird's heads? So you could say, look, maybe the illustrator wasn't a bucky in all of Chumash and perhaps was not didn't know everything. But it's the bird's head Haggadah is one of the special things about it is that it seems very crafted down to every single detail. And it's highly unlikely that something as glaring as this would have been gotten wrong. So let's keep that in the back of our minds for a moment as to who are these two people who seem to be stuck in the middle of this picture with the wrong human features. So to move from that to this week's parsha is the Shalach. So at the beginning of the parsha, we're told that Bnei Yisrael are leaving Mitzrayim, and Paro is chasing looking after them. And we're told that as they go out, everything is great, and then they start to travel around in the desert, and we're told, Va'amar Paro livnei Yisrael, nivuchim heim ba'aretz, sagar aleihem hamidbar. Paro says, they are nivuchim heim ba'aretz. They are confused, they're wandering, they're kind of wandering around. Sagar aleihem hamidbar. The desert is closing in on them. So we read that pasuk very quickly, focus a lot. What does it mean, nivuchim heim ba'aretz? What does it mean, sagar aleihem hamidbar? But if you look at the beginning of the pasuk, the beginning of the pasuk seems very odd. The Amar Paro livnei Yisrael. How do you translate that? The Amar Paro, Paro said, lit bnei Yisrael, to bnei Yisrael. So that doesn't seem to read, because who is Paro talking to? Paro's talking to his other advisors, right? And Unklus right away there says, Ve'yemar Paro al bnei Yisrael. It doesn't mean to bnei Yisrael, but rather it means with respect, regarding bnei Yisrael. The Targum Yerushalmi also says, Amar Paro al isak bnei Yisrael. Paro said, regarding the situation of the Jews, regarding the people of the Jews, that they are in the desert, they are lost, they are wandering. And Rashi over there kind of brings the whole thing home by saying, Bnei Yisrael, clearly, al Bnei Yisrael, regarding Bnei Yisrael. And then he quotes two or three other psukim where we see this formulation of li, to, actually means with respect to. Hashem yilachem lachem. Hashem will fight with respect to you. Hashem will fight for you. Imri li afihu. All these formulations of li, instead of being to, are regarding. So you could say linguistically, pashup shot, the Amar Paro livnei Yisrael. Paro said about the Jews, they're trapped in the desert. They're wandering in the desert. They're trapped. And we go home. But if you look in the Targum Yonasan translates, the Yemar Paro, Paro said, to who? L'dasam v'la'aviram b'nei Yisrael, d'mishtayrin b'mitzrayim. Paro said to Dasam v'aviram, who were Jewish, who had decided to stay in Egypt. So the Pasuk says, V'amar Paro livnei Yisrael, Paro says to the Jews, who are the Jews here? Targum Yonasan quotes the Medrash, these Jews are Dasan v'Aviram. And that's who Paro is talking to. So you have to give pause there for a second and say, okay, so anytime a Medrash tells us something, we have to understand the Medrash in that context. And you have to understand that the Medrash is not speaking in a vacuum. And the Medrash is speaking within the context of the story. So the Medrash has to, even if the Medrash is, you want to say, giving kind of magical or miraculous or kind of what we would, you know, somebody say, oh, it's a medrash, right? But it still has to make sense within the story. So here the medrash is saying, right, this ambiguity in the pasuk of the Amar Paro livnei Yisrael, so the medrash is keying off of that and saying, who is Paro talking to? Paro's talking to Dasan v'Aviram. It still has to make sense within the story. Why does it not make sense within the story? How could Paro be talking to Dasan v'Aviram? Dasan v'Aviram d'mishtayri v'mitzrayim. Dasan v'Aviram who remained behind in Mitzrayim. Is that possible? How could he be speaking to Dasan v'Aviram? What's the problem with that? Right, presumably he's chasing after the Jews. That means that Dasan v'Aviram is with them, with Paro, while he's chasing them. But what does that mean? It means that Dasan v'Aviram have survived up until that point. Now, Dasan v'Aviram chose, according to this Medrash, chose not to be with the Jews leaving Egypt and going through Yam Suf, but rather to stay behind in Mitzrayim. There were lots of Jews who chose to stay behind in Mitzrayim. The Pasuk tells us, Vayasev Elokim es ha'am derech hamidbar Yam Suf, that God took Bnei Yisrael around the other way. Vachamushim alu bnei Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim. What does that mean? Vachamushim alu bnei Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim. When they left Egypt, they left chamushim. So pashup shot is that they left armed. But Rashi points out vachamushim mechumashim echad michamisha yetsu ve'arbas chalakim mesu v'shloshes yimei apela. Only 20% of the Jews left Egypt. The other 80% died during Makas Choshech. Why did they die? Because they didn't want to leave. So basically, here God was saying to Moshe and all Bnei Israel, I'm here, I'm taking you out, we're all going, Korban Pesach, etc., etc. And you had large percentages of the Jews, according to this Medrash, who were not interested in leaving. They were happy where they were. Either because their existence as slaves was perhaps not everyone in the population had the same existence as a slave. You had some Jews who were living off quite, you know, quite well. We know that Shevet Levi was learning Torah. And we know that other Shvatim had, you know, either intermarried or integrated into society. So you had lots of Jews who chose not to leave. They didn't want to go. They were very happy where they were. They were very comfortable where they were. So Vachamushim Alu B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Yitzrayim, says Rashi, says the Medrash, anybody who chose not to leave died. Why did they have to die during Makas Choshech? So the Egyptians wouldn't see them, because if the Egyptians saw all these Jews dying, they'd say, oh, this whole thing is a hoax. It's not God taking the Jews out. People are dying left and right. So in order to make sure that the Egyptians were not aware of the fact that that such a large percentage of the population died, it happened during Makas Choshech, when the Egyptians couldn't see anything. And lest you think, is it possible for, what are we talking about? You know, 80% of the population, so if 600,000 men left, how many people are we talking about?
3 million.
3 million. So you say, is it possible that 3 million people could disappear in a 1 week time and nobody would notice? Say, unfortunately, look at modern Jewish history, and yeah, if people don't want to notice or people don't want to care, we don't have to look back to Jewish history. It's, you know, you have close to 1 million people who have disappeared in Syria. No one knows, you know, they're gone. It's not an accident that it happens in Makas Choshech, right? Choshech is symbolic of darkness, it's symbolic of a lack of vision, it's symbolic of a lack of clarity. So in that type of environment, in that type of lack of clarity, that's when all of a sudden people can disappear. So, you know, lots of people have different questions on Midrashim. This Midrash that says that 80% of the population died, and you say, no one noticed, how's that possible? Unfortunately, that's not the question on the Midrash that troubles you. But the question on the Medrash that does trouble you is, wait a second, why weren't Dasan Vavirim clearly chose not to leave?
Weren't they in part of the rebellion of Korah, which I believe took place after they died?
So now you're asking a second question. So now we have two questions. A, how is it possible that Dasan Vavirim chose not to leave Egypt, were alive after Makas Choshech, were talking to Paro, but yet at the same time somehow got back to the Jewish people and were part of the rebellion of Korach? So it seems like we got Dasan Vavirim all over the place. They're playing many, many roles here. So what's going on? You could say there are contradicting Midrashim, which is often, sometimes you do have contradicting Midrashim, but a Midrash can't contradict a Pasuk. The Midrash, when it puts the story forward, You can't have a Medrash that says that Dasan Vavirim were in place A, that they never crossed Yam Suf, and then you have a Pasuk that says that they were part of the rebellion. You can't have a Medrash that says, you can have two different Midrashim that contradict, but the Medrash has to be internally consistent, and the Medrash has to be at least consistent within the framework of the Pesukim. So we have to say, how do you make sense of all of this? So you could say that Dasan Vavirim are kind of tropes. They're not actual people, but they represent a segment of society. That would work vis-a-vis how Dasan Vavirim were talking to Paro before Yam Suf, and also talking as part of the rebellion as Moshe, because they're just tropes. But that trope should have died at Makas Choshech, right? Even if you want to say it's not really Dasan Vavirim, whoever is represented by that group, which is basically Jews who chose not to leave Egypt, Jews who chose not to leave Egypt died in Makas Choshech. So, right. Well, yeah, but you had the troublemakers, because even in the group that actually chose to leave and was on Sfas Yam Suf, that was the group that said Hamim Bliyan Kfarim B'Mitzrayim. They said to God, they said to Moshe, "What? Why'd you take us out for? We'd rather go back." So you didn't need your troublemakers to that kind of representative troublemaker to be only with Paro. You had them with the Jews. So again, all these questions are within the context of the Medrash. So you could simply say, it's a contradictory Medrash, you know, it's fine. But I'd like to try, and I think if we try, we can make a little bit more, make it work a little bit more consistently and make it work a little better. So if you look in Sefer of the Ma'aril Diskin Al HaTorah, so it's Chidushim Ma'aril Diskin Al HaTorah. So my parents are here, so I often try to, whenever I think my parents are going to be out of here, I try to reference the Ma'aril Midiskin. Why? Because My mother will correct me here if I get the lineage correctly. My grandfather was an orphan in the Diskin Orphanage in Yerushalayim, right? So, and at the age of 16, in the Diskin Orphanage, he learned how to type on a Hebrew typewriter, because in the Diskin Orphanage, everybody had to learn a trade. So the Diskin Orphanage was not only named after Rav Diskin, it was founded by Rav Diskin. Rav Diskin made Aliyah from Eretz Yisrael to the Yishuv HaYashan, and he looked around and he saw the situation and the circumstances there. There was tremendous poverty, and there was also tremendous, there were orphans, which were not being taken care of in a systematic manner. There was chesed, which was being done on an individual basis, but there was no systematic orphanage. So one of the things that he brought with him from Europe was the concept of an orphanage and the concept of training orphans and vocationally and kind of getting them up on their own two feet. So my grandfather was the benefit of the Diskin Orphanage. He learned how to type, and when he came to the United States, he ended up being the typist for Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel, and that's how he got connected to YU, and the rest is history. So I always like to Lili Nishmas Rav Diskin, who started the Diskin Orphanage, who saved my grandfather. So we'll say this, Lili Nishmas Rav Diskin. So Rav Diskin comments on this idea. He says, wait a second. How is it possible that Dasan Vaviram could have survived Choshech? The people who didn't want to leave, those are the people who died during Makas Choshech. And he says, wait a second. Who were Dasan Vaviram? He says, Dasan Vaviram were not the standard or the regular group of Jews who didn't want to leave. The group of Jews who didn't want to leave, who died in Makas Choshech, were either a group who didn't believe in God, they didn't buy into Moshe and his new message, or they believed, but they had gotten so comfortable in Egyptian society that they were unwilling to break free and kind of take that next step. Dasan Vaaviram had different issues. Dasan Vaaviram were mad at Moshe. They were always mad at Moshe. They didn't like his leadership style. They didn't think he was correct. They didn't think his approach was correct. Dasan Vaaviram were not rejecting God and were not rejecting Yitzias Mitzrayim. They were rejecting Moshe. And because their rebellion was different than the standard rebellion, instead of being killed in Makas Choshech with the other Jews who didn't want to leave Egypt, they were allowed to survive. And not only were they allowed to survive because their rebellion was slightly differently, they also had a special schus, which is that Dasan Vaaviram were in the group of Shotrim. The Medrash says that Dasan Vaaviram, even within a slave society, you have to have different classes in order to make sure things get done. And you had the foremen, right, who were in charge of different groups. And if the Jews didn't deliver their quota of bricks or whatever they were supposed to do, then the Shotrim would get hit. And the Shotrim would take the punishment. And we know that those Shotrim in general, because they, instead of allowing that punishment to kind of pass through them down to their individual slaves, and they took the punishment for the other Jews, they were rewarded. Many of them got Ruach HaKodesh and ended up being the Zakenim, but not all of them. So Dasan Vaaviram were Shotrim as well, says the Medrash. So Rav Diskin says the combination of these two factors, A, that they weren't rebelling against God, and it wasn't that they wanted to be part of Egyptian society. They were just fighting with Moshe, as we see later on, right? And the fact that they had a special schus, that they had protected other Jews and saved other Jews from physical punishment. The combination of those two, says Rav Diskin, gave them the schus and the protection to survive Makas Choshech. And therefore, even though v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'aretz Yisrael, most of the Jews who didn't want to leave Egypt died in Makas Choshech, Dasan v'aviram were able to survive, such that they were with Paro at that point in time. And then you have to explain, says Rav Diskin, why were they with Paro? So Paro at this stage, says Rav Diskin, he's chasing after the Jews to do what? To bring them back. And he figured, Dasan Vaaviram, these guys are known figures, they're characters, they're charismatic. When I chase after them and I tell the Jews all is lost, what are you going to do? You're going to wander around in the desert. Dasan Vaaviram are going to help me speak to the Jews and have them come back and say, where are you running away to? There's nothing to go to there. Come back. And that's part of Vayomer Paro B'nai Yisrael. Paro says, Vayomer Paro B'nai Yisrael. Paro says to B'nai Yisrael, Paro says to Dasan Vaaviram, look, they're trapped. They're not going anywhere. There's no place for them to go. Let's chase after them and bring them back. And Dasan Vaaviram were on board with that. So that leaves us with one question then. So Right? How did Dasan v'Aviram get from being part of Paro's cohort of the special advisors on returning the Jews to Egypt to all of a sudden somehow getting through the Yamsuf and ending up with the Jews somehow? So if you look at this as a sefer called, if you look at the psukim that describe Kriyas Yamsuf, we're told Vayet Moshe es yado halayam, vayolech es hayam beruach kadim aza kol halayla. Moshe stretches forth his arm, the wind comes, vayasem es hayam lecharava, the water is turned to solid ground, vayibaku amayim, and the water splits. Patzik chafbez, vayabo b'nei Yisrael b'soch hayam b'yabasha. And the Jews come into b'soch hayam b'yabasha. And then we're told, we sing that Maimlaim Choma, the water becomes walled, by Yidif and Mutzrayim, the Egyptians run after them. By Yomer Hashem Moshe Netes Yad Chal Hayam. So now God says to Moshe, reach out your hand and close the water. By Yashuvo Hamayim Alamitrim, Alichbo Val Parashav. And it's going to come down on the Egyptians. By Yet Moshe Es Yado, so Moshe does it. By Yet Moshe Yado Al Hayam. By Yashav Hayam Lifno Spoke Al Eis Anom Mitzrayim Nasim Likraso. By Iner Hashem Es Mitzrayim Besoch Hayam. So Moshe lifts out his hand, and the water comes back down, and they start to drown. Vayashuvu hamayim, vayachasu es harechev es haparashim lechochel paro habayim acharim bayam. The water comes back, it covers up the horses and the chariots, all of the army. Habayim acharim bayam, lo nishar bayam ad echad. Not one is left. And then Pasuk Chavtet says, Uvenei Yisrael halchu bayabasha besoch hayam. And the Jews walked in the yam. The hamayim lehem chamam yiminam mismolam. And the water was on the left and the water was on the right. So there's many, many different ways to understand Kriyas Yamsuf and how it happened and how the chronology happened. But at least on its plain reading, there seems to be a problem here. In Pasuk Chaf Beis, we're told, Vayavo B'nei Yisrael B'soch Hayam. B'nei Yisrael came into the Yam. And then we're told that Moshe closed the Yam down on the Mitzrim. And then we have another Pasuk that says, B'nei Yisrael Halchu B'yabasha B'soch Hayam. That the Jews walked in the Yam. Why are you telling me this twice? In Pasuk Chaf Beis, you already told me that the Jews came into the Yam. And now you're telling me again that they came into the Yam. Why the repetition? Why the story doesn't seem to make sense? So one approach that I think has gotten a lot of fame recently, some of the Haggadahs, I think it's a picture in the Balei HaTosfos, and then it's brought down in a few different Haggadahs where you have that Kriyas Yamsuf was this like semicircle, that while the Jews were in one side of the semicircle, the Egyptians were on the other side of the semicircle, and that while the water was closing down, the Jews were still walking through the Kriyas Yamsuf on the other side. So at the same time, Vayavo b'nei Yisrael b'soch hayam, here they were on this side, they started walking, and then kind of started walking like this, and when they got to over here, the water started to close over here, and this pasuk says, "Uvenei Yisrael halchu b'yabasha," but Israel kept walking on the ground. So the reason why the pasuk breaks up like this is to tell you that it was part of the miracle, like a miracle within a miracle, is that not only was this Kriyas Yamsuf, but Kriyas Yamsuf happened simultaneously. While one part of the Yam came back down on the Egyptians, the other part of the Yam remained open. That's one shot. The Be'er Mayim, I mean, it's an machlokas Rishonim, which is reflected very well in the Prince of Egypt versus the Ten Commandments. So if you have time on your hands, so my nephew, for his bar mitzvah parasha was B'shalach, and his Dvar Torah was to compare the Prince of Egypt versus the Ten Commandments. And you see, the Kriyas Yamsuf is portrayed very differently. I don't know if either... of the producers had this in mind at all, but it's basically the two different approaches reflect the machlokas Rishonim as to how Kriyas Yamsuf happened. But the Be'er Mayim says that no, what's going on over here? How do you explain this repetition? Rather, what's going on here is Uvenei Yisrael halchu b'yabasha. What does it mean halchu? Halchu is yachid or rabin. Halchu is rabin, plural. Says the Be'er Mayim Chaim, Miut Rabin, oftentimes when we have the plural, what's the absolute minimum of a plural? Two. Miut Rabin is two. So who are the people who walk through the Yam in Pesach Chafet? In Chafet, B'nai Yisrael walks through the Yam. In Chafet, Vayavou, B'nai Yisrael, Halfu B'yabasha, Miut Rabin Shnaim, Lomar Ki Al Shnaim Yisrael Levad Nikra Hayam. That there was a special Kriyas Yamsuf that took place for who? That took place for Dasan v'Aviram. So not only did Dasan v'Aviram, the schut of being the Shotrim and protecting B'nai Yisrael, not only did it save them from But after they were in with Paro and they were going to try to get everybody back, and they see what's going on, what do? They do tshuva. And they say, you know what? Maybe we don't agree with Moshe, and maybe we have problems with Moshe, but at the end of the day, look what God is doing here. So Moshe, we have problems with him. But if God is splitting the Yamsuf, we need to be on the other side of that Yamsuf. And not only did they have the schus of being saved from Akas Choshech, according to Berimayim Chaim, they got their own Kriyas Yamsuf. They got Pasik Chavtet, Vayavo Bnei Yisrael, Uvnei Yisrael Halchu B'Yabashah. That's referring to Dasan V'Aviram. So to answer to the question, how is it possible that Dasan V'Aviram were with Paro before Kriyas Yamsuf, and then with Moshe after Kriyas Yamsuf at the rebellion of Korach? This is according to the Berimayim Chaim. This pasuk explains it. So look at the journey that Dasan V'Aviram have taken. Right, so you have Dasan V'Aviram, who perhaps were the original people who were fighting Rasha Lama Takereacha, right? And then you have Dasan V'Aviram, who are the Shotrim, and they're willing to put their own bodies on the line to protect Bnei Yisrael. So they are more Jewish than anybody else. They are saving other Jews for the sake of even at the risk of their own lives. But then, because of their internal quarrel with Moshe, they're not willing to leave, right? They're not willing to follow Moshe. So they break off from Bnei Yisrael, and they say, you know what? We're going to stay behind. We can't stand Moshe so much. We're going to stay behind. But then at Yamsuf, they realize that, you know what? Even if we disagree with Moshe, we have to get back in. And the schus of, I guess, that ben adam lechavero, of that protecting other Jews, and the fact that they weren't rebelling against God, but it just was an internal strife, somehow, according to their Chaim Chaim, they had enough schus that they actually got their own Kriyas Yamsuf. And then they rejoin the Jews, only later to do what? To rebel and break away again. So you have this incredibly fascinating concept within the Midrashim that you have this Dasan V'Aviram, if you want to call them as images, or whether this is actually Dasan V'Aviram or the concept of Dasan V'Aviram, of Jews who are in, but then they're out. But then they're in, but then they're back out again. And then they're back in. What do you do with people like that? So if you go back to this picture of in the bird's head Haggadah, what you see here is right next to Moshe, I'm sorry, right next to Paro. That's clearly Paro, because he's got the crown, right? And he's got the other soldiers there. And you have these two folks who have bird's heads, but they don't have the hat, right? The ideal Jew in the bird's head Haggadah has a hat, has a beard, and has a bird's head. Here you have two Jews. They don't have the hat, they don't have the beard, but they still have the bird's head. And the fact that this is clearly Dasan V'Aviram is because this guy's holding a spear, and that guy's holding a spear. What are they holding? They're holding a whip, and they're holding a club. Who uses a whip and a club? Shotrim, a taskmaster. So, yes, they took the punishment from the Egyptians when people didn't deliver, but they also had to prod their own people along. So this is Dasan V'Aviram. And what Michael Mark Epstein in his explanation, or one of his explanations on the Bird's Head Haggadah, he suggests that you have a time period. The Bird's Head Haggadah is written at a time period where you have Jews who are struggling with the concept of Shmad, where you have other societies that are basically saying to them, either convert or die. So you have some Jews who ran away, you have some Jews who converted, and you have some Jews who died, some Jews who were willing to, who made the ultimate sacrifice, Al-Kiddush Hashem. But those Jews who chose to convert, whether you want to call them Maranos or whatever, or new Christians or whatever they were referred to, they didn't always stay converted. There was a lot of back and forth between these populations of people who converted, and then the Muslims would overrun the town, and then all of a sudden, okay, now the Christians were gone, they go back to being Jewish. Or somehow they're able to escape, and they go back to their families. And the response to literature is filled with discussions as to, you have the wife who got out, and she's married to the guy who stayed behind and converted to Christianity. Is that guy still Jewish? What's the nafka mina? If he's still Jewish, she needs a get. He's in Spain, she's in Portugal, you're not getting a get. She's in Holland, he's still in Portugal, you're not getting a get. But if that person, because they became a mishuma, because they converted out of the religion, has totally severed their ties to Judaism to such an extent that they lose their status of Jewishness, then all of a sudden, maybe she doesn't need a get. Maybe that kedushin wasn't a good kedushin. Maybe she's like, and the shaylas and tshuvas deal with that question of basically where you have people who are, they're Jewish by birth, but then they're kind of leaving, but then perhaps they're coming back, and you have people who did come back, and now that the person does come back, do you require them to be misgayer? That's a whole nother source of tshuvas as well. You have somebody who had converted to Christianity, and then somehow they escape, and now they're back in the Jewish community. Do we make them convert again? Well, on one hand, you want to make sure that they're really back in. But if you make them convert, it implies that they weren't Jewish. How can you say they weren't Jewish? They were Jewish. We have a concept, Gemara in Yevamah says, Yisrael afal pi shachata, a Jew, even though he sins, or she sins, she's still Jewish. He's still Jewish. So yeah, you thought you converted to Christianity. The Christians accepted your conversion to Christianity. But you know who didn't accept that conversion? God, or the Jews. So you thought you could convert out, but you can't convert out. So, but if you make the guy misgayer, it implies that what? That he did convert out. And then if you make the guy misgayer, and that implies that everybody who converted is no longer Jewish, then all those women who are married might get remarried without gittin. So you have this constant struggle between what? Between identity, where you have individuals who are Jewish, but are breaking away from Judaism, and then coming back into Judaism. And what Michael Mark actually wants to suggest is that Dasan Vaaviram in this picture reflects that idea perfectly. Because you have an individual who, you have Dasan Vaaviram, they were so Jewish that they were willing to lay down their lives to protect other Jews. But then at the same time, they broke away. But then at the same time, they did tshuva and they came back. But then at the same time, they fought with Moshe. Who is a better representative of this group of people who are coming back and forth and are struggling with their identity than Dasan Vaaviram? What does the author or the illustrator do? He sticks them right in next to Paro, reflective of the Medrash of Dasan Vaaviram, that Vayomer v'amar Paro l'bnei Yisrael nevuchim heim ba'aretz. He's talking to Dasan Vaaviram. He gives them the bird's head because they aren't Jewish, but he takes away their hat. He takes away their beard because are they really Jewish? All the Jews left. They stayed behind, but then they did come. So it's a classic, for him, it's a classic representation of a society that's struggling with that exact concept. So to fast forward thousands of years, do we have this conflict today? And probably the most classic example of this conflict is the case of Brother Daniel. So Brother Daniel was a Jew who survived the Holocaust, if I'm getting my history correctly, correct? And then he converted and became a Franciscan monk. And he shows up at Ben Gurion Airport, and you know, back in the audience, you walk down the ladder, you're on the ground, you go through the room, and then you come to the customs, and they say, "What are you doing here?" They say, "Law of return. I have returned. I'm Jewish." And the 24-year-old minister of the interior guy looks up, and here's this guy with this huge cross on his chest, Franciscan robes, and he says, "He says, I'm not checking off Jewish on the form. You're not Jewish. You're a Franciscan monk. You're the farthest thing from Jewish." And he says, "Because I'm Jewish. My parents were Jewish. I've survived the Holocaust. I'm a Jew." This case went to the Israeli Supreme Court as to whether this Brother Daniel could come to Israel based on the law of return. And it created a firestorm at the time. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wrote a lengthy article where basically the question is, can you ever sever your Jewishness? Right? We had the Gemara says, Yisrael afal pi shachata Yisrael hu, where a Jew, even though the Jew has sinned, even though she has sinned, even though she has turned away, you're still Jewish. Does that ever cease to be true? Is there anything that you can do that so divorces you from nationhood, that so divorces you from the people of Israel, that ultimately you have broken away, and therefore you lose your status of being Jewish? And in that article, he goes through the different arguments, and ultimately he comes to the conclusion that Brother Daniel, going so far as to be Meshumad, and then to take on the active role of a religious clergy in a different religion, that's too far. At some point, the rubber band breaks. At some point, the connection breaks. You've severed the connection, and you lose your status as being quote-unquote Jewish, which is an amazing idea, because we usually completely refer to Judaism based on birth. There are two ways to become Jewish. Either you're born to a Jewish mother, or you convert. So here you have somebody who's born to a Jewish mother. You say, okay, once you're born in, you're in forever. He says, no, I'm in, but I'm not fully in. But that just addresses one part of the conflict. It doesn't really address the other many, many manifestations, because you have people who will stand up and say, define themselves and define Judaism along this whole long range and spectrum of concepts, where a person will say, well, I don't believe in God, but I'm still Jewish. And all this plays into what's the definition of anti-Semitism. I mean, I was having dinner with a coworker the other day who was railing about how she's been the subject of anti-Semitism her whole life, which is like hysterical. Doesn't look Jewish. She's atheist. She claims no connection. She intermarried out. She divorced. She adopted two children, neither of which she converted. But here she stands. She goes, I'm Jewish. I am 100% Jewish. And you're like, there's no part of you that's Jewish. But she's claiming Judaism. She's claiming Jewishness. And then within those spectrums, you have a whole range of spectrum. So it seems fascinating that literally thousands of years after Yetzias Mitzrayim, where you have Dasid Baviram, who are kind of on this sliding scale of being in, being out, being in, being out, where you still have the exact same issues that face us today. And then the last thing, and on this note I'll end, what's also fascinating, at least I think is fascinating, is the Pasuk says, Vayomer Paro Livnei Yisrael. Paro says to Bnei Yisrael. So again, if you hold like the Sheet of Rashi and Unglis that he's talking with respect to Bnei Yisrael, then it's obvious. Who are the Jews? The Jews are that massive people over there, the 1.2 million people who just left. He's talking about them. But if you say, if the Medrash says that who is Paro talking to? He's talking to Dasan Baviram. That means that the Medrash is putting in the mouth of Paro, Vayomer Vamar Paro Livnei Yisrael. Paro speaks to the Jews. Who are the Jews? Dasan Baviram. Now, if you ask any of the Jews of the 1.2 million people who are running away, are those guys Jewish? They would say, no, they don't represent me. That's not representative of who I am, of what I am. But in Paro's eyes, Paro views them as Bnei Yisrael, which now leads to the question of who gets to define what is Jewishness? Who gets to define who's the Jew? So Paro says, well, Dasan Baviram, you guys are Jewish. By Amar Paro, Bnei Yisrael. Paro says, you're Bnei Yisrael. Even though all the Jews look at them and say, you're not Bnei Yisrael. That's not who's representing me. And here you have, why has this become relevant? This becomes relevant also in modern history in terms of the concept of Gerus. So you have the idea that, I mean, this is the fight just the last few years, but this is going back to the 50s, 60s, 70s. It used to be that there were no converts, right? Because if you converted into Judaism, you got killed. And there's certainly, if you were able to convert, nobody questioned your sincerity, right? Because if you were willing to convert, there was nothing good about it. So it must have been because you wanted to convert. So all of a sudden, in the last 100 years, that situation has changed. And all of a sudden you have a question, okay, is that a sincere conversion? Well, why did the person convert? Did they convert for God or they converted for marriage? They convert for all these other reasons. So lechachila, you're not allowed to convert for any other reason except for God. B'di'eved, maybe there's room for flexibility. So then the person says, well, when you converted, so now I look at this person and she doesn't keep kosher, he doesn't keep Taras Mishpacha, doesn't keep Shabbos, doesn't keep anything. But at the time that they converted, the question is, when you went down in the mikvah, were you sincerely converting to Judaism? So, one of you say, well, if the person didn't know any of the halachos and had no intention of keeping Shabbos, keeping mitzvahs, how can you say that they sincerely intended to convert? Unless what the person says is, yeah, I am sincerely intended to convert just like and become like all the other Jews that I know. And all the other Jews that I know, you know, Kirk Douglas, Alav HaShalom, right, says he's Jewish. You know, Shimon Peres is Jewish. Right? So they're not shomer any mitzvahs, but they're strong, proud Jews. So if who gets to define who a Jew is impacts when a person goes to be Mizgayer and says, I'm going to become Jewish. Well, what does that mean to become Jewish? Which type of Jew? Whose definition of a Jew? Is it Paro's definition of a Jew? Is it what I perceive to be a Jew? Is it what television tells me to do? So these things seem ridiculous that society's view of what is a Jew should somehow impact halachically, but perhaps it does. Perhaps it actually has a halachic impact, which goes exactly back to Dasan Baviram. Were Dasan Baviram, after all of Bnei Yisrael left Egypt, and they're the only two Jews left alive in all of Egypt, were they still Jewish? Paro thought they were. Ve'amah Paro, Bnei Yisrael. Right? And then they come back. Then they.
There was Hitler's definition too. Hitler's definition.
Oh, Hitler's definition.
Right. 25%.
Right. Which is that's what the Supreme Court in Israel came up with for the law of return, which arguably was a mistaken definition. But basically, the view that the Supreme Court of Israel allowed Paro to define what a Jew is, right? If Hitler would have killed you, then we're going to allow you, we're going to call you a Jew. Does that make sense? Not really, but on some, you there, because of all these complications, there's at least conceptual understanding. So, just to sum up very quickly, and then we're down in Marv, from one ambiguity in the Pasuk, Ve'amar Paro, Livnei Yisrael, how do you understand Pshat in the Pasuk? Who is he talking to? Is he talking about the Jews, or he's talking to the Jews? If he's talking to the Jews, which Jews are he talking to? There are only two Jews who could be left. It's Dasan Vaviram. If he's talking to Dasan Vaviram, how did Dasan Vaviram get to the other side of Yamsuf to subsequently fight with Moshe? And if, in fact, it is Dasan Vaviram, what is their definition? Are they Jewish? Are they not Jewish? And how does that impact us today? It seems like it is a never-ending cycle. But the one thing that does seem clear, according to the Ber Mayim Chaim, is that if an individual is willing to risk their life to save another Jew, then that is enough to make him or her worthy for their own separate Kriyas Yamsuf. So whatever you want to say about Dasan Vaviram and their Jewishness, you have to think very long and hard before you want to cut someone off. If the Ber Mayim Chaim says that God performed Kriyas Yamsuf for an individual because they were willing to risk their life to save another Jew, so if that according to God is that's God's definition of Jewishness, at least vis-a-vis that, I think it makes one pause before we are willing to cut other people off. Travis.
Right, so this is in
Right, so this is
the words.